I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to say welcome to everybody. I'm glad everybody is here tonight. Got some exciting things tonight, so I got to be here at 1:30 and see some of the presentations, so good stuff. Roll call, we have all council members here, and now we'll go to 2.01, presentation of Main Street Beautification Project. Lynette, you're on. Where you at? Okay.
Didn't have time to get nervous.
Giving me instructions, move this thing closer. Would like to welcome you here tonight for our presentation of our Main Street Beautification Project initial concept design. I think housekeeping-wise, is the sign-up sheet circulating around? And one more quick note, folks. We're going to have a question-answer period right after Mark's presentation, so feel free to participate in that. And then our group is going to move to the foyer for cookie and punch and further discussion so you can continue with the council meeting. So that's how that will play out. The idea of the Main Street Beautification Project really took off approximately 2 years ago, just before our Main Street repaving project went to final bid. As you recall, we came to you with a proposal to place power and water stub outs the full length of Main Street so we could access or have a point of access along each block for power and water. You approved that proposal, and as the Main Street paving project was completed, the stub outs went in. So our street, our beautiful new street out there, you cannot see them, but we do have a site on each block for accessing power and water. With that in place, it then became apparent that, whoa, we have just all kinds of possibilities for a beautification project for Main Street. So our group got together several times. We have visited many, many projects around the countryside looking at beautification projects that are in place, looking at elements that we could possibly bring home and use in our project. Over a period of time, we have accumulated a lot of information. And information does nothing unless there is a plan to go with it. So we knew that had to be the next phase of the project, to get a concept design plan in place for Main Street, and thus enters our program tonight. Mr. Preston, Mark Preston, is an architect from Burien. Mark has his own architectural firm over there, and Mark will be presenting what you're going to see tonight. It's been a really amazing process working with Mark. He has taken our ideas and has kind of given his spin to our ideas and has some wonderful ideas to present of his own. So that's part of what you're going to be seeing tonight. So one thing I want you to keep in mind as we move forward here, this is a concept design presentation. We're at the idea stage here, folks. Nothing is carved in stone yet, so just know that. So when you see something up there, oh my gosh, how could we be doing that? Just remember, we're here to discuss it, we're going to show you possibilities, and I think you're in store for something really exciting in the next few minutes. So, Mark, you're on.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me okay? I've got a mic here. Okay, great. As Lynette pointed out, what we're getting together tonight for is to kind of a progress presentation, show you where, based on the kind of design parameters that everybody's given us, present what we've taken from that. But this gave me also a chance to explain kind of our thought process that we went through when we put some of these things together. The first thing I want to do is to show the Main Street portion on the plan here. We took the actual drawings from Gray and Osborne, pieced them together in one continuous street layout, overlaid them onto the Google Map photo of Othello. When I first came over here, one of the first things I noticed also was the coming off the main over here, 26. This seemed to be quite a major route into the downtown area. Purposes of our study is just to focus on Main Street itself, but anything that we come up with for this plan and beautification could easily be adapted for that coming down to the entrance off 26. It appears that there are two major kind of entrances into the town of Othello. So as you can see, we're looking at a 15 block portion of Main Street. At first we were requested to look at the area, I believe at 7th Avenue here, 7th to 8th and then to 9th, to look at that as to concentrate on a two block section of Main Street, kind of a showcase area to do the first phase of it. After we took a look at that and noticed the businesses and the sidewalks and such around there, Lynette came up with a very good idea that it made more sense maybe to focus on the last two blocks down in this part of town where there was quite a lot of vacant land along there. The sidewalks are pretty consistent for a 10-foot width. I believe in front of this smaller strip mall here, the sidewalk does neck down to about 6 feet. And so that makes it a little difficult based on the concept that we wanted to propose for some of the elements that are going along that street. They asked for options of beautification with lighting by itself and then lighting with some trees and such. The first thing we did, come along here looking at some of the existing condition. I point this out, you probably haven't seen them, but what I noticed is, and I'll go through these pictures fairly quickly here, we've got quite a hodgepodge of different things happening with the street lights. We've got the metal poles, and you can see right adjacent to some wooden utility poles. Continue on, and in this particular style here, we've got the signal light. This one is just a standard modern style looking with a simple arc on it. We come down here, again, some more metal poles. These are a little different variety. They come up and stop, and then it's got a different arc coming out from that. We come then further down the way, we've got lights that are mounted actually on wooden poles with just the straight on them. Again, across the street, similar type thing. Again, this is a major utility line with the power coming through the intersection and a straight arm light, kind of a different variety put onto that one. Again, we've got the wooden next to the traffic signal, the metal poles. Getting in front of City Hall, we've got a modern style here with the banner arms on it. At the end of the block, again, continuing of the modern style light, and then just adjacent, we pick up again the wooden poles coming pretty much down the rest of the way with the signal arms at the intersections. I pointed out earlier, you might be able to see it in this one. What you can also see looking in the distance, some of these wooden poles kind of at different angles. They're not, you kind of get that galloping Gertie sense of Tacoma Narrows, you know, these poles going in different directions there. Like I mentioned earlier, I hate to point that out, probably nobody paid attention to it, but now everybody's going to be, you know, focusing on that. But we've got a variety of things going on all the way down Main Street. I think the intent with the lighting is to come up with consistency, a look that can be used throughout the whole place, coming down toward the end. And again, I put this picture in to talk about the pedestrian lights here at CBHA, and this pole in particular jumped out at me right there with the quite a wow in it on that one. I think Terry mentioned that the city owns these. Maybe Terry's responsible for pulling that wire a little too tight or something on there, putting the bend on it. So that's just kind of going down the street, we see a lot of things going on with the lighting, so probably a need for developing some consistency there. Coming up to the end of the last two blocks, again, we overlaid these plans onto the blocks that are out there. You can see we've got quite a large vacant area here and on either side, so it's a good place to showcase the stuff that we're coming in. Let me go to the pedestrian lights. At CBHA, it was first brought up with the pedestrian lighting, try to stay consistent with the style of light that's out there right now. There is quite a large variety of lighting that's available. This is a nice type of fixture here in that you can get some light styles that have quite large bases on them. I think those are more applicable for an urban setting where they have multi-story buildings. But we didn't want something that was kind of a small base, so these end up looking like toothpicks as you get on down the line of the street. They are a nice feature that can be used on not only these pedestrians, but also the arterial lights, and they're readily available. National style, the series is the one that we'd be looking at. It looks fairly consistent with what's out there installed now at CBHA. The light itself, or excuse me, the street is 80 feet wide. Let me jump back to with the first option of lighting the street using that style of light. You see what we've done is we've replaced some of the metal poles out there for the arterial lighting with this historic style lamppost. What I did find when I was kind of looking through the whole street, the 15 blocks, that there are quite a lot of areas where arterial lighting is actually missing. That end of the street only has a couple of arterial lights. The place seems fairly dark out there. We would be looking at probably about 16 new arterial lights along the entire length of Main Street. The street itself is 80 feet across. They've got the 10 feet of sidewalk with a 9-foot parking on either side, and then two lanes of traffic either direction, and then a center turn aisle there. So roughly this, down at that end of the street, this is what it would look like with the lighting option. Coming in with trees, what we would do would be to drop in from the approved list of trees that we had from the city. It was felt that the European hornbeam would be a good tree to use here. Would not take a lot of maintenance on it. And we've got these lights being about 60 feet apart, dropping a tree in here again, those also would be at 60-foot on centers, but at about every 30 feet, we'd have a nice architectural street element there. And we'd get nice lighting from these pedestrian lights to create a nice pathway along there. It was also discussed, some people are concerned about the trees. And so we briefly looked at an option of coming in with some planters. Since we have the stub outs, and at each location, you would have a water stub out, and possibly even power if you wanted to light these things up, say, at Christmas time. Whether a tree goes in or some sort of potted plant could work either way. We also looked at the pots would have some sort of trellis in there. Again, this is just for kind of a bookmark to show that we would put something in there. Or they could come in with some sort of large planter with a lower level of vegetation there to add a lot of color and such. The city requested, with the new sidewalks being about 10 feet wide, they wanted to leave 6 feet clear for handicap accessibility and circulation. So we're looking anywhere from 3 to 4 feet from the curb back for us to put our lighting elements and any trees that we have in there and or potted plants that might come in. So this is the option, how it looks with the pots. And then one of the items that wasn't kind of in the initial study, but what we saw from discussing the beautification project as being something that is helping with economic development, helps to jazz up the area and encourage people to come to town, stay in town, patronize the local businesses and spend money here and such, helps create an identity for downtown. What we saw is that they're having a nice sign, welcoming sign, into the city along the street. It might be kind of a nice feature to have. When I first came into town, here's a view of the vista. It looks, looking back toward 14th there, kind of blank along there. We do have the one sign here with the organizations on the one side. Coming in, this is the sign that I saw coming in from 26, and it actually seems to be quite a ways back from the intersection. I think it's back in here. A little tough to see. On the way into town, I stopped in at Grandview. There was talk of putting an archway across the street to welcome everybody into town. Grandview's arch that they have across there covers, and I don't know how many people here have seen it, but it covers 3 lanes of traffic. And the support posts for it are quite large. It picks up a lot of real estate and such. Here, what we've got is close to 80 with the 10-foot sidewalks on either side. We'd have like a 100-foot span for any sort of archway coming across there. And that can be some pretty substantial structure that we would need to put across there. Looking at this layout, I saw that the city owns this center island here. They've already got the real estate, so we wouldn't, if we tried to stay away from the sides and not impact any landowners that may be adjacent to the right-of-way, we might be able to utilize some sort of signage in there. What I also wanted to do was to, looking at the logo, any sort of sign that we come up with incorporates some of the elements that they have here. You know, the sand cranes are very important with the festival. The council chambers here, we see a lot of the railroad history. And then we've got the landscape in the back with the basalt rocks and such. So if we were standing on Main Street here, and we were to put some sort of sign element in the center of the road, we came up with kind of an archway that would welcome everybody to the city of Othello. When I first laid this out, we saw that this nice space frame truss across the top with a nice arc kind of had a railroad type motif in it, so we thought, well, it might be kind of nice to put a trestle type structure for supporting of this. And then having an arch that doesn't necessarily have to go full width across the street, just cover also similarly three lanes of traffic, just the inside lane and then the center aisle. We've got a nice arc here where these cranes, silhouettes of them, of birds in flight, might be kind of a nice feature to put on there. And then we introduce the basalt rocks down here, put these up on some nice plinths for security purposes. Leaves the island available for additional vegetation that the beautification committee might want to come in with the river rock and such on there. From a two-dimensional aspect of it, this elevation here kind of shows a relationship for these elements. What I've got is, and it's a little bit off the screen here, but we've got the sidewalk, and then the parking area, a lane of traffic, two lanes of traffic, excuse me, then the center aisle. But what we've done is the semi-trucks are usually about 14 feet high. I believe it's the regulations. We held the bottom of this arc to be at about 16 feet, so we would have clearance on it. But I think the natural inclination of these truckers would be to kind of hang to the outside lane anyway, the open space. If nobody is parking there, we'd obviously swing wide, but regardless, coming under the arch, they would still have plenty of clearance on there. You can see the sign relative to the overhead arterial lighting also. So a bird's eye view of the whole intersection up front. This is kind of what we might be looking at if we were to light up the whole area with our nice historic style lighting. Get some trees in and put our central signage there. Really jazz up the entry into the city. And this is the sort of sign element that can be picked up and used down off of 26th area also. Again, the city owns the real estate here, so there's no problem with getting some sort of permission and rights to any landowners that might be adjacent to the right of way. In this view, we turned it, you can see, typically we're at about, for our arterial lighting, we're at about 125 feet, and that typically staggers coming across either side of the road. And then we set the pedestrian lighting at about 60 feet on center. If we come in, you can get those down to, say, 40 feet on center, if you want to have more efficient lighting that doesn't use as much power on there. But we risk, I think, on something with this street being as wide and as long as it is, that we end up getting them close together. We end up having a wall, kind of, it's forming a wall with the poles and possibly the trees in there. And then as most of the structures and businesses along here are just single story, we want to keep it kind of important to have visual access through these elements to see the businesses, the signage and such along them. You can see from the side view, still quite a gap in between all these elements here for enabling you to see what's going on with the businesses beyond. These trees, of course, are growing and getting more mature and stuff. They're not going to pan out. Maintenance would keep them pruned appropriately, and we'd still get plenty of lighting, the wash from these pedestrian lights, to light the nice pathway along there. Again, with the stub outs at each location for these light, the landscaping, if there was chose to go with pots, this is roughly what it would look like. And again, these aren't anything cast in stone, they're just the idea to show a pot there with some sort of trellis and vegetation. If there's a concern that the trees become unmanageable, at least with the pots, the vegetation would only get up to a certain height on there. It would be a little more manageable. kind of a sidewalk view. What you might see as you're walking down with just the option of strictly lighting. And then what it might look like with the trees as they're planted. One of the comments we had is if we ended up doing this in phases, what it might look like if we plant trees now, 3 or 4 years later we go to another couple of blocks, plant them, would that look odd if we had different sized trees there? You can obviously get trees that maybe are a little more mature for the next phase of planting, but if it came where you did a two block section each time, I think obviously you would get it where the trees might not be consistent, and it'd take a little bit of time before they become fairly consistent through there. So then it might be a good argument for maybe if trees are accepted to look at, maybe that's something that put all those in initially just so that we get that consistent look with the vegetation. Lights obviously are going to be the same regardless of when they go in. The color scheme for the lights, a lot of times you'll see them green or black, but here the CBHA has the dark brown or bronze color, and that would be consistent with these fixtures here. The sidewalk with the pots might look like this from a street view there. And then final one might be with everything in place. This might be kind of what you see walking down the sidewalk with not only the sign in place, but the trees and the historic lighting coming along there. So I know I spoke, I hope did I do okay within the 20 minutes there. I think I touched on everything. Again, we had the comments. I tried to talk about some of those. We did, there is some signage, existing signage along the street. The poles themselves have the ability to, if there's a speed limit sign or a turn right only, those can be easily relocated onto these, done in a tasteful fashion. What else? There's talk about a single pedestrian light versus a double. Again, we went with the double because of the consistency with what's at CBHA. And quite frankly, this is it's a pretty standard look for stuff that is pedestrian lighting along a street. If you get in someplace that's away from any sort of streets, they tend to then go maybe to the single luminaire on them. And then I think the only other thing that I might want to mention that wasn't brought up, before I get into that, we did talk also about banners. Any of these lighting manufacturers do have the nice arms that can come out for banners or flags that might be want to be put on there. They even have them for the hanging baskets, but with the maintenance for watering them and the winds that come through here, that was decided probably not a good option to go with there. Also, anything that might go on the banners, we wanted to show again just a concept. Banners aren't a bad idea, but what to put on the banners is probably part of what the city might want to think about for the identity of the city, if they want to focus on one particular thing for a banner, or maybe have a variety of them, a different one for each as you go down the street. That's probably something that the local businesses with the Chamber of Commerce and the City Council can address, probably under a separate issue. The only other thing I did mention earlier was, these lights do also have the ability to, with the shielding for at night, keeps the light directed down. I know some people have a concern with washing out the night sky and the stars. I don't know if that's an issue out here, but we do see that sometimes in urban areas where they complain about that. What's nice about these fixtures is we can't have that shielding at the top. Directs it down, lights the path, keeps the dark, sky nice and dark. Everybody appreciates that out here. So that's kind of it. Oh, yeah. I brought this on. This was a standard. This was a This is kind of a sample of the fluted post section that one of the manufacturers offered up. Sometimes they had a concern. A lot of times what you'll see these is just with a banding around them. They kind of come in with some strapping. It doesn't look very appealing. What's nice about some of these new fluted styles that they have, these simply with an Allen wrench, the actual attachment is actually split here. So your maintenance people can come in and unscrew the connection, take it off without having to lift the whole luminaire off, take the light off and such. And so then you can come in with your banners. Maybe it's a seasonal thing or some particular event, come in with it. Your speed limit signs and such go on there. Or they've got, you know, the different attachments for the flags that might want to come on off on the side. Or they have the straight arm attachments, the, you know, spring loaded also. If somebody gets on there, hits it, or in this particular case with the winds, they aren't going to bend anything on them. The one 16 to 18 feet high for the lighting.
So by the time you drop down a banner, you're going to be totally out of harm's way for whatever kids coming by and stopping you and trying to get the banner. So that's, I don't know if you can see that from
Now the width of the street also kind of drives that. You know, if we get something smaller, 8 to 10 feet, it really looks like, And you can see they work well with the arterial lighting, and in some places we are kind of close to that. The national sign, let me find this here real quick. Now this is something from the early 1900s. They show kind of their range of light styles they have here. Here are our luminaires. There's kind of the scale with some people next to it. And I think this is a little out of scale. These people aren't that small. They should probably have, you know, 6-footers should probably come up out in here on it. But this is the range. Again, here are the single luminaires. But along the street, we're looking at the double luminaires. One other thing, let me go to the 2D sign elevation here. We also, what's nice with the space frame construction here and the trestle type design, putting them on this nice plinth block, we held them at a height there where, especially for the trucks, even some of the passengers, somebody in here, you should be able to see over the top of this thing. And with the trestle, we're looking at everything being pretty open on this, to where visually, you know, you'll be able to see, being in the center of the traffic lanes, we still don't have a real obstruction to be able to see through this and see what's going on. It also, again, I just pulled off elements from the logo, some of the things that I saw kind of work nicely in here. This isn't to say that you can't modify this, add some things. I know that the agriculture, pretty important in the area. It's a nice position on the logo. We don't have it represented here. What's nice also about the agriculture is that it can help to add some color to this sign in here. So that's something to consider possibly adding in the future for that.
Okay, thank you, Mark. We're gonna open up the meeting to public comment on this presentation. Anybody have questions or comments they'd like to say? Go ahead. No, just right there.
Okay. I'd like to know, this is for the Holy Street
14th down to First, or is it Railroad?
All the way down to First.
To First.
And you're commenting the sidewalks are 10 feet wide?
The new ones that were put in are roughly 10 feet wide.
Okay. In front of the shopping center, it's 8 feet as far as I know.
No, I think it's actually smaller.
During this road construction, they were talking 8 feet. There's no more room in that parking lot for 3 more feet.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do?
Well, what we would, and I have the plans here. We kind of looked every block by block where these things might fall. And I think what we'd have to do when we get to that next step, if they say, yeah, we like that concept, we understand that we can't follow a prescribed 60-foot on center everywhere we go. And so we'd have to look and see what we have to work with and make the best of it. Maybe if the arterial lights tend to have a larger base on it, maybe there aren't any in that particular stretch, or maybe they're at the corners where they need to be on there. Maybe the city would like that 6 feet for the ADA. Quite frankly, you can come down to about 4. So there's something that I think could give and take both ways. And maybe the...
I'm all for the beautification. I'm just not for reducing the parking lot.
And oh, is it your parking lot? Get down to the city hall, the sidewalk even meanders off the street, comes into the city hall area there. What we're proposing is that the pedestrian lights follow that path, but again, that breaks with what we have the rest of the street. They're not going to be placed along there, so that's a situation where we understand, we work with what's in place out there. I mean, Eamon's first comment to me was, we just paved the street, got new sidewalks, don't touch them. but we got to break into it somewhere and get some things put in there. So I think when you look at the overall concept, the long range view of what the potential to have there, you're really going to be sharp.
And Mark pretty much has a directive at the outset that we're not messing with our newly paved main street. We wanted to maintain the integrity because that's one of the unique things about Main Street. It is the width, and that you can shoot an arrow and it can go straight for a mile.
Our placement of this sign here, also what we've done is tried to have a minimal impact on it. Let me see if this is the view that has it. There is a turn lane here at 14th, and so what we've done is place it back to where we can at least get 4 or 5 cars stacking, so we don't interrupt any of the traffic circulating, normal traffic paths that take place there. So really, when it comes to this paving work, about the only impact would be where the sign might be placed. For our purpose of the presentation, we just showed it kind of even with this organizational sign here. If we get to, let's see here. We get down at this end of town. I was just down there between our meetings, and it appears that there's a side street right here and somewhere in this area, just either past it or in front of it here, might be a good place where it doesn't interrupt or cause any problem with that, but also doesn't conflict with any of the businesses wanting to get in and out and such. So there's a, it can be pulled a bit closer to 26 versus having the sign way back here. So there's quite a large area that we can place that sign in for the Dell First Avenue. A lot of flexibility. Again, this concept to show you what some possibility. And it gives you something that's kind of unique. You know, you could tell everybody, yeah, we have our own arch. But it really isn't an arch. It goes traditionally from one side to the other. It's something a little unique here.
Any other questions or comments? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think if we got the green light to proceed with this for the kind of the technical end of it, that's when Grant Osborne and Mary Julius is here from the engineering outfit. We'd be working with an electrical engineer to find out the what we're looking at based on the function of the height of the light, how much light we want, specifically for the pedestrian, kind of lighting we want to throw out on the sidewalk there. They would work to look at the energy efficiency of it and what kind of lighting, color of them. You can get the warm, the cool, but all sorts of varieties. I mean, I got some brochures here, and you know, open it up, they got a fold out, you know, 100 different lights. I'm thinking, holy smokes, this takes an engineer to figure this out. Well, that's what he gets paid big money for. I don't know, do you have anything else to add to what I say?
Any other comments or questions? Council, do we have questions or anything from the council? Nope, okay. Well, I like what I'm seeing. I'm excited to see that we're moving forward and the committee's doing a great job and having you involved. What we're gonna do now is we're gonna continue with the rest of the meeting, but if you're interested in a discussion with Mark and Lynette and her team outside, they want to go right out in the lobby right there. They have cookies and punch and things like that for everybody if you'd like to go out, or you're welcome to stay and continue to be here for the rest of this meeting also.
I think one final thing, I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to present this to you and such. We have not specifically addressed any preliminary cost estimates for this, only because we wanted to give a direction of what we are putting out there. Once we start, because we didn't know what was going to be in and what was going to be out. We may have trees, we may not. So at this step, I think what we'll end up doing is we'll tighten up what we're going to have in our proposal to present, and then we will have some costs for the next time associated with all this for everybody.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mark. Also, if you have a question about that horn beam, the European, when you walk out the double doors, look right to your left against the building. That's one of those, I believe. So you can see it right there if you want to, that tree. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming. Senior prom picture. It's like a senior prom picture.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Mark, for all your work. Okay, 2.02, consideration of public work funds. And Larry. And Terry, okay. Terry and Larry.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about the Public Works Trust Fund loan. The deadline for submitting our application is May 31st. It was May 11th, it's been changed to May 31st. There is $400 million in funds available and $15 million per jurisdiction. We are being told that there is very little or no criteria that we have to meet to acquire the money for our projects. Some of the highlights of this program are eligibility systems include water, wastewater, storm sewer, roads, bridges, solid waste, and recycling. Public Works Trust Funds are state funds with no local match required. Projects completed early may qualify for a reduced interest rate or extended repayment terms. This is a very low interest loan ranging from 0.5% to 2% with the option of reducing the rate further. The city can submit all the projects they want at once with Public Works Trust Fund Board contacts us with an available dollar amount. Council can decide how many of those submitted projects they would like to do. There are three projects that we have come up for your consideration. Now these are engineer estimates. 14th Avenue construction is $2,125,000. The city portion of that is $850,000. SR24 industrial area is $11,515,000. And the third item that I have down here is the residential infrastructure work off in this area, east of 7th and south of Main. For instance, Larch Street for water and paving. The estimate is $820,000 approximately. At this time, I'd like to ask Council if they have any project that they would like to add to our list.
Broadway?
First Street?
And First Street.
Yeah.
Lee Road, between 14th and 7th, is getting really bad.
Yeah, it is.
Enough projects?
No, I don't have any more. Pretty much covers it right there.
Okay.
So that's all I basically have.
Oh, okay. That's what you have. Any questions from Council?
So to be clear, we want to submit for all of these, the three that Terry proposed, and a couple three that I heard from Council.
Great.
Looks
that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, then we'll see what we can do. So. Thank you, Terry.
Well, it can be less than 1% depending on our past audits, the management team and the financial department that we have. It can be lower than 1%, and I believe we will get lower than 1%. Our last rating when we bonded Main Street was the highest rating a city our size could get. So we fare very well when somebody looks at our finances. So I think we're a bit lower than 1%.
And it's really nice to see the state coming back with this, because last year at this time, this money was actually gone. It was being taken out of the budget completely. But a lot of effort from the cities and working with the legislative has brought it back. And it's really nice to see it, because it's very well used money in cities. It really helped out a lot.
Yep. Okay, 2.03, status of well number 6, discussion and direction. Larry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. We wanted to present to you with a brief update on well 6, what's been happening since our last presentation to Council. And if you'll recall, last year when well 6 was put back online, there was an excessive vibration that basically shut things down. Contractor came back out to investigate with us, Public Works, hydrogeologist, and Green Osborne, what could have caused the vibration. and as it turns out through investigation, we believe the vibration was caused by the impellers that are part of the bowl assembly, have the vanes that turn and actually bring the water up into the piping column, were damaged. Debris could have been gravelly material, was sucked into the screen at the bottom of the bowl assembly and physically bent the impellers. Contractor looked at the impellers themselves, looked at the bowls. The bowls are in fine shape. It's just that the impellers, you could tell that they've been pitted as if something has hit them and literally caused them to curl. Not all of them, but enough of them that we figured the excess vibration was caused by the imbalance of the impellers not being able to rotate properly. So in looking at what could have caused that, everyone that we've talked to, Public Works included, is of the opinion that damage was caused by that debris, that we actually physically have some of the gravelly material still in the screens, and that's what has caused the problem. In looking at the well hole, it was determined that send a camera downhole again, do another television inspection, so we could compare basically what the hole looks like now in comparison to last year. And we found that in a few cases, there are some cavities that have developed, basically where the gravelly basalt material, some of it, for lack of a better term, has blown out or caused holes to develop in the water bearing zones. We could see an increase in the amount of iron bacteria and calcium deposits. It's been in there before. It's more pronounced now. I went back and looked at slow motion at the video from 2011, and you can see, even though it's a different angle than what the company that did the 2012 video did, you can tell that there's some bacteria in there. It hasn't caused any problems water quality-wise or water quantity-wise, but it's probably prudent to go in and try to clean it out now while we can. There have been cases in some communities where the bacteria and the calcium has gotten so prevalent that it has adversely affected both the quality and quantity. We're not at that point here yet, though. We also discovered that the concrete grout plug that was installed in the bottom of the hole to separate the highest fluoride levels is leaking. And we've talked to the contractor about that and indicated to them that we believe that's their responsibility, because the contract says they were supposed to do a tight grout seal that would not allow water to seep through. So at this point, we're going to be working with the contractor to get them back out, to put more grout in. I understand that Public Works has received quotes from three contractors to do the removal, the cleaning out of the bacteria and the calcium nodules. And Terry will have an agenda item for next week's council meeting. And prices range from about $19,000 to $78,000. The low bid was from a contractor that we've worked with before in the city here, Schneider Construction and Drilling. And they'll come in and remove the material from the inside of the well hole itself. And the contractor will then come back out, seal the hole, and there'll be a repair cost to repair the impeller vanes. And we're working with the contractor on that. That'll probably be, with tax, under $10,000. We're thinking maybe around $9,000. We did talk to the contractor about the potential of costs. He has balked as far as wanting to come back and get in and do anything as far as the repair, because he doesn't feel he's responsible for any of the damage. And we've told them that in discussions with the city and Public Works, we're in agreement with that, that it just doesn't seem that there's anything the contractor has done that caused the damage to the impellers. but we need to work with that the contractor to convince him that the plug is leaking, that he has to come back and fix it. So that's the next step. And then get in and get the, if council so desires, get the bacteria removed. And once that's done, I believe we can put the well back together and get it back online. And if there's any questions, we'll be happy to answer them.
How do they remove the bacteria?
There's different ways, but I believe what Schneider has said they'll use is wire brushes that's attached to their machine, their drill rig. I think one of the reasons why the pricing is so varied, different contractors have different techniques, all the way from wire brushing, which is the most low-tech way to do it, upwards of bringing in explosives or acid washes, liquid nitrogen, freezing the inside of the well hole. Each of them have pros and cons associated with it, but I think the easiest, most reliable way is the wire brush.
Larry, did you say that we were going to clean that before or after they repair that seal on the bottom?
It depends upon the timing involved, but I think we'd want to get in there after the seal was put back in.
Okay. Yeah, because there's probably going to be a little bit of that residue left after they grout the bottom of that. So, yeah. Okay.
If I give an impression otherwise, I apologize for that. But that would be the tip of the way.
Any other questions from council? Okay. Thank you, Larry. Okay. Discussion of cat control. Eamon.
Thank you, Mayor. The issue is one of complaints about neighborhood cats, and our ordinance or our code book is silent on this issue. And does the council want to pursue this in any fashion? So that's where we're at. We haven't done a lot of work on it. We had a complaint, so we're bringing that to you and asking council, do you want to bring back some sort of ordinance or something to the council? Most cities do not have an ordinance that controls cats. The most that we've seen in looking at other cities is to establish a number of pets at one resident. For example, 3 dogs and 2 cats or something like that. So the issue is a complaint from a neighbor. I don't know if we'll be able to solve that relative to cats and cat paw prints on a hood of a car. So it's up to the council if you want us to continue further, Mayor. We'll take your direction.
You know, I remember about 20 years ago, this was an issue with the council, and I was out in the public hearing it, and it got to be a very big issue. Cats are free roaming. It's awful hard to regulate it. I don't think you could get enough manpower to even enforce anything. One stop the footprints across cars or anything else. Like I said, cats are free roaming. You could put a 6-foot fence up and that don't stop them.
Right.
It works great for our dogs, but I don't think it would work very well for cats.
Yeah, there's another thought of that. I realize that sometimes cats and whatnot are a problem with neighbors or whatever, especially if you get too many of them in one neighborhood or whatever. But if you start controlling them and say, hey, you can't have a cat, you have to keep it in the house, you have to have it at least like a dog or whatever, then what are we going to do with the rodent problem? You get rid of all these mice controllers and whatnot, and then you're going to have another problem that you're not even thinking about. And I'm not sure that you really want to make a regulation that way. I realize at times that it's not right that some neighbor's cat does things here and there, why not dig up your flowers or whatever. But you still, you know, like you say, it's a free roamer, so I don't know what the answer is. But.
Yeah, well, it sounds like there's not an interest by council, correct?
I mean, You know, to add to that, I actually bought a trap and caught a few cats. And what do you do with them when you catch them? That's what I ran into. I caught two, and I now I understood why everybody runs them out to the country and lets them loose. Because you, pet rescue doesn't take them. And so there's really nowhere to take them. I mean, if anything, I mean, I paid to have one fixed and let it loose back in the neighborhood again. Just because I didn't want any more. So, I mean, we can't chase them all. You're right. We can't.
Okay, good. We'll let that one die then. So,
thank you, Mayor.
2.05, first quarter report from Adams County. Oh, wait. We're going to drop that one. They're at a fire still. So they will not be coming in. So, yeah, they're out doing their job. But we have a fire out in the country that they're still fighting. 2.06, finance discussion related to transportation benefit district. Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Council had presented, presented with information, excuse me, regarding the creation of a transportation business district and held two public hearings to get feedback from citizens. Tonight's presentation shows the financial impact of imposing 0.2% increase to the city's sales tax rate. I made a point of this. It's important to note that the TPD must be created in order for this increase to be presented to voters for approval. It has to be in place to even take that step. If approved, the funds can only be used for projects directly related to the transportation business district as defined by state law. And I want to bring up another. What I did here is I took 5 years of sales tax receipts and I averaged them to get an average revenue of $1,193,632. Our sales tax rate, the city's sales tax rate is 1%. I mean, when you buy something, you pay 7.7. 1% of that total, that it goes to the city. So I divided this amount by that number to find out how much it would equal in sales. So it's almost $120 million in sales. I took the new 2%, if we went with a 2% sales tax increase, times that number, it would equal about $238,700 per year. So that's kind of a picture of that sales tax. That money would come to us segregated from our other sales tax. It would come as TBD money, and it would have to be used for TBD issues. It could not be used for anything else. It's called special revenue. We would set up a separate fund for it, aside from everything else we do. It would be a separate standalone entity like the water fund or some other fund, and that would be called our TBD fund. So the money that comes into that would go into the TBD fund, and the expenditures would be expended out of the TBD fund. So we would have, that's the bookwork. In other words, that's how we would show all the activity that went on with the TBD. Are there any questions?
Mike, you showed the $238,000. Do you remember what it would have been if we did the $20 TAM fee?
Yeah, it was about $128,000 roughly, and a little bit of change, but around $128,000.
So a difference of $100,000.
Yeah, $100,000 to $110,000.
So the advantage of this would be is that the whole community would be paying as they're purchasing.
That's correct. Whether they live out of town or in town, it would impact everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's more equity, I guess.
What questions?
Yeah, what's interesting about the, you know, talking to the public, I've had a lot of people talk about the 0.02, that they were a lot more in favor of it. And MRSC has come up with really nice numbers and information I see that was emailed to us today on the transportation benefit district and what's communities and stuff. And going down looking through the list, quite a few of the cities have took it to their public, and that's what I like about it. Yeah. It's taken to the public to be voted on for that. And there's quite a few cities that have did that.
Yes.
And the communities are approving that. I think it's a much more fair that tax being spread around for the users of the streets.
I think of all the cities that have established a TBD, I think more of them have gone to the sales tax than to the license tab. I went down through the list myself the other day, and then I just got some news recently on some others that were just passed and began, and I think there was like three of them, that, and they were all sales taxes.
Tim?
Yeah.
I didn't do that. A couple of questions here. It's my understanding we have to set up this district before we can do anything as far as either or whatever we do as far as the 2% or the tab fee. Is that right?
That's correct.
What is our deadline in order to get this, say, on the ballot for this fall? Are we pressed pretty close here? I know some of your initiatives and whatnot, there's a deadline that we have to do to get it on the ballot for this fall in case that's what we want to do. And that's what we would have to look at, how quick we need to form this district in order to even be able to do that as far as this 2%.
I believe it's 90 days, and I'll have to check that. I think we have to notify the election through 90 days. But I'll check.
Okay.
Any other question? Okay. Thank you, Mike. And Mike, the next one is yours, 2.07 monthly investment report.
Once again, with this, with our powerful interest rate here, you can see that the interest rate went up by 0.002 over last month. So this last month, in March, we made $500 on a $4.3 million investment. It doesn't get any better than that, does it? And that's on the LGIP. I'll show you the other one here. We had $4.6 million, almost $4.7 million invested in March, and our return was $6,400. And a lot of that isn't all real interest. This, the market value of the investments has changed as well. Okay, so I book it and I show it as interest because that's the easiest way to handle it. And so that's what those differences are there. So are there any questions on investments?
Questions? Okay, thank you, Mike. Do we have any committee reports? Any committees met recently? Nothing for committees? Okay. Unfinished business? New business? Okay, then this meeting's adjourned. Thank you everybody for coming.